very much for providing this tape, and we have arranged this so that Elmer Jocelyn, who I believe really is the only person living today and in town who actually saw this church building burn, the old church building, in the year 1900. And he has very kindly consented to give some reminiscences here for this tape, which we can use or put into a permanent record. And I'm very grateful to him and to you, both of you, for this sitting down together. Elmer Jocelyn has been a trustee of the church and a most valuable member in every way. Nothing about the church that he doesn't know, including this period in our history, which very few others do know. Thank you very much, Elmer. You go ahead.
Thank you, Dana, for the introduction. I don't know, this is not a factual talk at all. I'm not giving any times, or it's not supposed to be a complete report of the fire, simply my recollection of what happened that morning. I was born 1891 on April 1st, and though I was an April Fool, I've lived here all my life so far. So what I am saying, I am trying to remember as a boy, a few days older than, more than 9 years old. But I was living on with my father and mother on Court Lane at the time. And as I remember it, it was sometime after midnight. I don't know exactly what time, but I've seen it recorded as 1 o'clock, and I've seen it recorded as 2 o'clock. But anyway, it was after midnight. And the fire alarm system had been installed, I think, the previous year. And the alarm consisted of a bell, what they call a clapper bell. What that means, I don't know. But it was in the cupola of the what we call the courthouse, which was occupied partially by the district court and also by the Middlesex Mutual Insurance Company. And we heard the alarm and the clapper of the bell, and it sounded, as I remember, Mark 16, which at that time was at the corner of Main and Walden Streets on the Mill Dam. I don't believe the bell was heard too far away from the center of town, but we heard it. My father went down and found out that the fire was in the back of the church. And he came back half an hour or so later, and he said, they think they've gotten it out, but they're not sure. He said, I'm going back and see what the story is. Well, he came back very shortly, and as I remember, he said, Cora, to his wife, my mother, if you want to see the church, you better get up. Oh, I heard it, and of course, that was the signal for me to get up. My brother had already gone down, and when we got there, the entire church was in flames. The fire started somewhere in the rear of the church. I don't know whether they absolutely determined what caused it or not, but the church had just been renovated, painted inside and out, I think outside, and it also had been wired for electricity. And there were several things that they spoke of at the time as what might have caused it. They were taking pictures in the church of the renovation using the old flash paper instead of the electric flash bulbs that we have today. And the wiring had just been completed. And also, but as I remember, I think they decided that it was started by a spontaneous combustion of some oily paint rags that are in a closet in the rear of the church. So I don't, there's no definite cause that they can put their fingers on. But anyway, it started, apparently, it started in the rear of the church. They thought it was out. But it got some air, suction somewhere, that pulled the flames up into the upper part of the church in the attic. Of course, the attic of the church was completely dry, very combustible, and a huge place. And once they got it in there, once the fire got into that, I think everybody said, well, that's the end. All we had for apparatus I had a hand pump. Whether we had one from West Concord, I don't know. But I remember seeing the hand pump, which in those days were a pump that was connected with a hydrant. We had some water pipes in the street, and it was operated by 4 to 6 men on a wooden rod on each side of the apparatus, and it was an up and down proposition. They pumped alternately on one side and the other, creating a suction and also a pressure on the hose. And hose reel were what they call a hose reel, were carried on two wheels, big wheels, with a drum between them. So the wheels were probably 6 or 7 feet high, and the hose was wound up on these wheels. And these wheels were dragged by a group of men. The apparatus, the pump, was drawn by a pair of horses from the livery stable diagonally across the street from where the fire station was. And there was a good deal of force from it. Of course, the men were spelled every once in a while as they got tired. But the entire church, when my mother and I got down there, was a mass of flames. And people were standing around. Everybody was crying. They know it was the end of the church. I believe the church was built 1712, and I know, well, I'm not going to go into that right now, but the custom of that in those days was that any member of the church, or particularly adult member, had died. The minister and the sexton were apprised of it, and the sexton would toll the bell. Now, there's a difference between tolling and ringing. In ringing the bell, which was done for church services or for any celebration, the church swung back and forth, and the tongue was in the center, and that caused the sound. In a tolling, and well, the toll, it was just a hammer. It was actually weighed by another rope, and it just struck once. And I remember distinctly of my hearing, I was watching my mother and hearing her. Any member of the parish or anybody interested would count the strokes of the bell, and then, in accordance with their age, or suspected age, they struck 60 times, and they would stop and think, now who could that be, 60 years old? And it was pure guesswork. There was sometimes that know that certain person around that age was seriously sick, but that was the custom. So Mr. Willard Farrer was sexton. He was the town undertaker, and he was sexton of the Trinitarian Church across the brook. And he got into the vestibule in there, and my brother was around there, and he held the lantern while Mr. Farrer tolled the bell for the death of the church. It was very touching. I remember it as a child, 9 years old. I see my father crying their eyes out. I'm feeling it myself right now and talking about it. But he told it, I don't know how many times, but he kept telling it. And as I understand it, as I was told, they were made to to get out of the church. Because I was told that they got out of the church minutes before the bell came crashing down. And it was related because nobody knew. The bells were, of course, way up in the steeple, and they came crashing down right straight down to the ground floor. But, and of course, the bell is on the lawn of the church now, showing the melting pot. When the building of the new church, as I understand it, they wanted to use the bell metal, in the new church. But when they took it up with the foundry would not guarantee the pitch of the new bell by using a part of the old bell and putting it in with another bell. They could not guarantee. Now what pitch, what tone it was, I don't know. But if it were a G, they wanted some bell that would be compatible with the other bells in the town. And they could, so the new bell in the new church is a brand new bell cast, I think, in Troy, New York. But anyway, to get back to the fire itself, it was a complete loss. I think there were some parts in the very rear of the church that did not burn. And I understand, and I'll ask Dana Greeley to correct me on this, Mrs. Leslie Anderson, who was formerly Miss Esther Wheeler, lived with her father on Fitchburg Turnpike, a big house just off Sudbury Road. And she was told Dana that part of the portico of the old church was incorporated into her father's house, or in the house that her father, Frank Wheeler, owned and was occupied by some of his help on the farm. And Dana and I went over there one day this last year, and we, with a picture of the rear of the church, and we felt that we had identified this bracket, that's the architectural name or not, I don't know, but a bracket that looked like the picture that we had of the church. So we feel that that's part of the church over there. Also, in the ruins of the church, about the only things I saved was some of the china, I believe, some chairs that are in the pulpit area, and I think, as I remember, they took up some of the pews in the front of the church that were not burned, that were saved. I don't know whatever became of those pews, whether they did take them up or whether they, as I remember it, when we saw it the next morning, it was just a flat mess of ashes burnt wood, and complete ruins. And all we boys poking through the rubbish, the ruins, the next 2 or 3 days, looking for pieces of wood that we could take home and carve. And we made pen holders out of them. I'd give a good deal today if I had one of those pen holders that we made. And then we also collected the handmade nails that were in the old church. They were hammered out, handmade. And of course, some of the timbers, some of the heavy timbers, were charred, but they were there. And I understand several of those were saved and put through a sawmill, and the charred part were taken off. An example of that is in the lintel over the door of the chair, of our chair, of the present church, as you go from the vestibule into the auditorium. And I think it is suitably inscribed. What it said, I don't remember, but now it's something to the effect, a timber from the old church or something of that sort. There are several other timbers that were left, and why they, I think they were incorporated into the present building, but just where, I don't know, unless this might be on either side of the doorway holding the lintel up on top. I think they're there. But anyway, it was a terrible experience, and even though it was 79 years later, I can see it's just as vivid, that sight of that burning church is just as vivid today to me as though it were the day before yesterday. A lot of the things are forgotten, of course, but the main subject is that had we had the water supply that we have at the present time, probably the church could have been saved, but I don't know that, because the Trinitarian church built, burned not too many years ago, and I think that was, I don't know, that's a good one. I think that was a complete loss.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's about all I can say. We lost the church. I saw it. And as I say, I can remember it just as well as I would have done before yesterday.
Elma Jocelyn, I think Jim Robinson and I, Dana Greeley, as the present ministers, really would like to thank you. That's a wonderful report, the way you gave it. Both so personally and so accurately and extensively. Wonderful report, the way you gave it, and a very valuable document for us now to have in our archives. But I want to ask just one question, and then we'll stop. Do you remember from what your parents said, or from the general atmosphere at the time, how quickly the people regained their courage and their faith and decided to rebuild, or just what their feeling was at that time?
I don't know, Dana, definitely. But I think somewhere or another, telephones in those days were scarce. Uh-huh. Not every house had a telephone. But I think I heard my father and mother say that they were going to a meeting that afternoon, the afternoon following the fire. Mm-hmm. They were going to call, just having a discussion. Wouldn't call it a meeting exactly. And I think within a few days, Now, when I say a few days, I can't tell you when, because I don't know the dates. But it was not long after when they had a meeting of the parish, and a committee appointed to proceed with the rebuilding of the church.
They certainly had great leadership in those days. I think we would today. One other comment, your house, Court Street, of course, right over the old burial ground hill there, was so near the church that you heard the bell very easily, or heard the courthouse bell, and you were able to come right here. But your family was that close spiritually to the church, I'm sure, as well. But the record tells us that they regained their courage and resolved to go ahead very soon. Your personal remembrance of it is very important. Jim, you just want to close this down and thank you again.
Just a minute, Jim. I want to confirm what Dana has just said. But if you mean, Dana, that we were living at brick heads, so-called, on the old hill burying ground, and near the old hill burying ground, we were not.
Was it off Bedford Street?
Father didn't buy that until 1913.
Oh, yeah.
We were living on Court Lane.
Court Lane.
Right next to the cemetery.
Yeah.
And we were just about the same distance from the courthouse, although we were across a field from the courthouse when we were living when the church burned.
Oh, yeah.
I won't say that. No, that's all.
Thank you, Elmer. I hope we can have you another time for other experiences in the last 79 years of the life of the church.
That's right.
Thank you.
No. Very good.